Hello and welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 66 of the Footmarks podcast. I'm your host, Bahram Kazi, who you can find at DefMango on Twitter. And with me, as always, is Jared Kimber, who you can find literally everywhere. And the title of this particular Footmarks is the Future Hybrid? And you might be confused, right, as to what this is about. Just to inform you.
It's about cars.
Yeah, it's not about cars. It's not about Elon. None of that. But the ICC basically has allowed the use of hybrid pitches, and some nations have been using them for limited overs internationals. Furthermore, county cricket is giving them a trial run as well in four-day games. And I just want to ask you, Jared, when was the first time you learned of this development? Like, how old is this?
Ooh, that is a very good question. I remember the first time I talked to a player. I can't even tell you who it was. It was Dan Christian. Dan Christian played for the Indigenous team, I would say around 2018, 2019 in England. So he was captain of the Indigenous team and they played at the Oval. And I had told him, he didn't know he was playing on a hybrid pitch. And I said, let me know about this hybrid wicket. And he sent me a message back going, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, he may not have said, what the fuck are you talking about? But, you know, what's a hybrid pitch? And I said, you're playing on a pitch that is sown and also turf. And he went off and asked me, he's like, you're right. Like, that's crazy. And then I saw him after the game and like I was chatting to him about something else. And he was like, all he wanted to talk about was this wicket. And it was really, really interesting. And so I knew they had them at the Oval around that 2018, 2019 period. And I knew they'd been using them in the Nets. And I mean, it might've been someone like Gareth Batty who told me, or someone from the Oval who first told me about them. But yeah, so I've been following this for about 5 or 6 years. And then when the ICC released that they were legal, which was maybe 2 or 3 years back, I contacted the ICC and I was like, this is a really bad idea. Not that I don't think hybrids can go ahead, but I was like, you guys haven't tested anything? And do you remember when the DRS came in and it was like, they hadn't actually tested if the DRS worked? Like, I know that sounds bizarre to say out loud, but they just accepted that it was on TV, so it must be real. That's like, you have to put studies on. You have to check if this thing is legit. You can't just go on the guy from Hawkeye telling you that it's right. You have to do this. And the hybrid thing, wickets, was exactly the same situation. And when I contacted them, they're like, yeah, but Jared, lots of pictures of shit anyway, so this can't make it any worse. And I was like, that kind of tells you how much care the ICC has about what happens on the ground, which is almost none. So there's been a couple of times, and then every time I've talked to someone who has had, so a lot of players have them as training facilities. So that there was a few county clubs and a few other people I knew who played on them in America and a few other places. I would just ask the players, tell me about it. What were the strengths? What were the weaknesses?
All right. So you basically mentioned how, you know, they're sewn together or to the ground hybrid pitches. And based on the work that I've read, your work, they're about 95% real turf and roughly 5% of them artificially created, right? And it's not grass. That's basically it, right? It's astro
or
whatever.
Yeah, not grass is the way it's putting it. Yeah.
But what else can you tell us about the composition of these hybrid pitches? Because in my head, I don't know how to construct that image, right? Sewing on artificial, not grass, onto real turf. Like, how does that work?
If you think about a backyard, right? I don't know why I'm pointing at my backyard, but you know my backyard. If you think about a backyard, and you think about the way that like grass moves and turf moves and shifts, and then you think about a cricket pitch where you have people running on it, so it's being forced. you know, it's being forced into different positions by sewing it together. And so I haven't seen it. I've never. I think Sysco is a big company, but there's about 2 or 3 big companies I think now. I haven't been to any of their factories to see how they do it. But the way it was explained to me by people who worked in it and also by the cricketers is essentially what you're doing is you're sewing it together to keep the structure of it more solid. So think about, like, I don't know if you had, it's like, this is so niche, but bamboo t-shirts are very different to than cotton t-shirts, right? But if you wanted to make a bamboo t-shirt more structured, you would put other material through in threads in certain areas to give it an extra structure to make it more solid.
Right.
And that's essentially what we're talking about here. How they actually do it, I've only seen clips online, so I don't want to pretend to be an expert on that side of things, but the idea is to make it more solid by putting the artificial stuff through it. And it's really, if you think about a cricket pitch, if you can keep it together, right, rather than it cracking and moving and you know, shifting and everything else, the actual playing surface should be able to be kept together for longer. So by sewing it and keeping it, I'm going to use the phrase tighter. I'm sure they wouldn't use tighter, but for our brains, let's say keeping it tighter together, it means it doesn't shift as much, which means you should get more consistency in the surface. And more importantly, you shouldn't get the degrading elements of it. Now, when it was first invented, I was told it was for T20 and one day cricket. And it was really, the way it was sold to a lot of bigger places is for nets. It's really important for nets because you have to spend a fortune on maintaining your nets. And it's because after a couple of days, the wickets just fall apart. If you can keep them together for longer, then you don't have to worry about that. And then the other thing is specifically for T20 and ICC events, when you have a square where you might only have four pitches in the middle that can be used on TV, right? And by the end of that tournament, do you remember the Cardiff pitch in
Champions Trophy semi-final, Pakistan versus England?
That pitch was done. Like, the groundsman was really honest. I remember there were all these conspiracies. Oh, they've slowed this wicket down for Pakistan, as if anyone would be fixing anything in cricket for Pakistan. You know, like as if the Indian people who run cricket are like, can we make this better for Pakistan people? We don't want England to make this game, who we've got a partnership with.
As if England and Wales weren't the hosts of that tournament.
Exactly. But I remember what the groundsman was saying is I think he said this kind of off the record, but he was quite open with it as well. It's just like, square's done. The square's just done. And if this was a game that wasn't on TV, we would move it to one of the other surfaces. But I think for international cricket, it's even harder because of the angles of the cameras and how many cameras you have. You literally sometimes can only pick from two pitches. And once you've played a bunch of games back to back to back, sometimes the wicket just doesn't come back. So that's what I was told they were for. And so the stitching allows for you to play multiple games on the surface and for you to be able to regenerate the surface quicker, but for you to be able to keep the old surface available for longer in things like the nets and everything else. So it makes sense from a cricket point of view, and it makes sense from a financial point of view. But yeah, the actual, I would assume, Bairam, there isn't anyone out there with a needle and thread. Although if that is what they do, good luck to them.
That was the image that was coming in my head. And then I was like, is it like an electric thing? Is it just a machine? But anyway, I guess we'll find out if this becomes mainstream. You mentioned this small squares thing, right? Like, a lot of grounds in the world aren't the oval. They don't have 10,000 pitches laid, you know, in the center. And therefore, you know, when a lot of cricket is played on those limited amount of surfaces, they are used heavily, and because of that, there is wear and tear. And then they're just not able to produce quality cricket on those particular surfaces. The Sophia Gardens example is actually brilliant over here. So hybrid pitches sound like a good solution for that, definitely, as you mentioned. And then also, there is the element of footmarks on actual turf pitches. And we've come full circle in this podcast if we're discussing footmarks, right?
We're doing a podcast about footmarks on footmarks.
And of course, we know that bowlers have issues landing on footmarks in a red ball game, especially, you know, in the latter half of a red ball game as it progresses. And hybrid pitches do offer solutions that allow some of these footmarks to be removed. Now, again, I'm sorry if I sound like a noob here, but how the fuck does that work?
What that means is off the side of the pitch, and we're probably more talking about the crease than we are the footmarks on the wicket. Mm-hmm. Although what I can gather that footmarks are less prevalent on hybrid wickets than they are on normal wickets. But it's really about where the foot lands, right? When the bowler lands, we can actually have a completely different kind of like astro section for that where there's a lot more seed there. Mm-hmm. And so they can make it harder. They can make it more compact. They can make it, do you know what I mean? And so I think there's a huge difference I'm throwing out in the future. My guess is in the future that you might even have a situation where the crease is here, maybe the foot past the crease. You can actually just yank that out after day two of a test match and put in a whole new possibility.
Yeah, no, that kind of makes sense, actually.
Yeah, I've heard people say that. And we've seen it. We've seen little bits of it, but it's usually just the footmark bit. Whereas if it's a hybrid wicket, there might be a way of just taking out the entire thing and replacing it with something else. And look, anyone who's ever played on a used wicket as a batter will tell you. My last game that I played, I went out on a wicket that was just, it had been used two or three times and the whole crease had crumbled. Right, it was actually very hard. You couldn't mark your guard because there was nothing left to mark, and there was nowhere to stand that was even. Right, and for me, I really have trouble on wickets like that because, I grew up on AstroTurf. Like everything was just solid. Yeah. I just stood there, right, and you know, you come to that sort of stuff. So, I think that's part of it, but I do think it's also that they can make it firmer in different parts in a way that you can't. I'm not saying they don't try and do it in conventional wickets, but conventional wickets can only get so hard. Whereas if you can put more thread in that area, it doesn't matter from the cricket perspective because the ball hitting that area, it doesn't matter how it reacts to it, right?
I mean, it's for really, spinners, it does matter, right? Foot marks.
No, but that's down the wicket. We're talking about right at the crease where the bowler is landing their foot.
Okay, okay.
Because that's the most important footmark, right?
Yes.
The most important footmark is actually the one that can injure bowlers and that makes it possible for bowlers to bowl their best. The interesting thing going forward is that next step that you were talking about, which is, does that mean that we can actually, is it possible that England could play a test match against India at home and have a hybrid wicket that isn't going to give Indian spinners any footmarks to bowl with?
Hmm.
Right? That's a really interesting question. That's like a moral philosophy question for cricket in the future. But as we are at the moment, we should be protecting bowlers so that they're landing on a flat surface as much as possible. And if this can do that, then that's a huge advantage again.
Yeah, no, 100%. Interesting how in your monologue, you mentioned how you grew up on Astro. So I actually wanted, you know, rewind time a bit and go back into the days of AstroTurf and matting pitches and how, you know, we know that Australia maybe even still uses it at a lower level, right? Not a test level, obviously, but when kids are growing up, they get to play a lot on these sort of surfaces. But back in the day, South Africa and even Pakistan used to, you know, use these surfaces for test cricket and they were quite popular. Now, it's funny how the story goes that Australia touring Pakistan, there is a matting surface where the two teams play each other. And Australia just like, okay, you know what? We've played on these, but this is test cricket. We want actual turf. Mm. And funnily enough, that test match is being viewed from the stands by American President Dwight Eisenhower. Crazy crossover, one of the wildest crossovers in the history of cricket, right? And Australia, they go on, Richie Beno's team, to complain to Eisenhower that, hey, you know what? Like, why are we playing on this matting surface? It should be actual turf. This is test cricket. And while we cannot confirm the story, whether it happened exactly like this or not, supposedly, Eisenhower, you know, went and had a chat with the president of Pakistan. And that turned out to be the last time we ever saw a matting surface in test match cricket. Now, this could be an episode. This could be an episode of Stupid Cricket, honestly. That's how crazy it is.
That last bit is true. We know that Eisenhower said, isn't test cricket played on grass or on turf or however he phrased it? And we know that the Pakistan president was embarrassed and that was the last test. So we know that is the link. The link that we don't know is how much the Australians primed the conversation.
Mm.
So I think it's mentioned in Richie's book. And I think Sam Loxton, who was the other person who was involved in the conversation, he was an all-rounder in 1948. And I think he was the team manager at the time. They've both mentioned that they had conversations with Eisenhower. But you don't know if, like, he was already thinking to himself, why is this being played? I thought they played on grass. Like, Eisenhower probably would have seen cricket played before.
Yeah.
Would definitely not have seen it on matting before, right?
This must have been, like, 50s, right? If I'm not wrong, or 60s.
Yeah, late 50s, early 60s? Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah, so, I mean, Bart King must have still been alive.
I don't know if Eisenhower would have seen much of Bart King, although yeah. I love where your head's at there. We do know that George Washington obviously played a form of cricket. But my point is that there's no way in America cricket was played on turf. So it was quite a weird thing. But yeah, it does tell you how random it was. And you can understand why the Australians were moaning too, because even if they'd grown up playing on matting, they played all their cricket on turf, and then they go to Pakistan, who's a team that is absolutely used to playing on matting, and they're probably thinking to themselves, this team is such an unfair advantage. And it's not just Pakistan, as I said, because it was the same with South Africa. When South Africa roll England in 1905-06 with the four leg spinners, one of the big advantages that South Africa had is they could bowl leg spin from the first ball if they wanted to, because matting wickets spin, right? Mm. They spin consistently all the way through. And so it was an advantage to some of those guys. Even little things like you can't use spikes, right? You had to use rubbers. And like it feels different when you're on them and everything else. So it's a fantastic story. I believe Eisenhower was the first president to a sitting US president to ever watch a test match. And I think Pakistan scored 120 runs in the day that he, maybe it was 130 runs in the day that he went to. So I don't think that was the only thing he was moaning about. I think he had quite a few things to moan about. But what it does tell you that we have had it before. And so again, it's one of those things of, it's not quite as new as everyone would make out that it would be. But I believe that Pakistan test was also the last time any test match was played on synthetic. But there have been international games, of course, played on at the associate level occasionally on matting and AstroTurf wickets. And these days, you don't really get matting wickets all that much anymore. You get AstroTurf, which is essentially a concrete strip in most places with a green carpet mat on it. But it's very similar to what you get on those carpet tennis courts. If you are following my work, we know that you are a true cricket sadist and you need your hit every day. And sometimes, sadly, there is actually no cricket to watch. So how about if someone made a very fun game that you could use for the moments when there is no on-field action? Welcome to Hit Wicket, a strategic game of cricket, which isn't about slamming your finger on the screen very fast. You work out what works best based on how cricket actually works. Dot balls lead to wickets, ones and twos to fours and sixes. So there is no way you can bowl a great Yorker every ball or smash three sixes at the beginning of your innings. This is proper cricket. Yet it still has some gaming powers in there as well. Hit Wicket is about playing, but also building and managing your team. You are the batter, bowler, owner, coach, and captain. It's your dream. No ads, just cricket. So download Hit Wicket today, because this is a cricket game made for you and supported by major cricket nerds.
It's crazy how, you know, one of the weirdest crossovers in cricket history had or came with mad implications, right? Because we haven't had a test match on a synthetic surface since. But let's come back to the discussion around whether or not hybrid pitches make sense going into the future. And one of the main talking points over here, Jared, is that test quality surfaces, turf surfaces, have a long curation slash preparation time. And hybrid pitches can definitely, you know, allow for an acceleration of that process. And that is a big plus in terms of accessibility and, you know, saving time.
Yeah, I think especially now, you know, we've got the, what's that? In fact, they sent me a message today. The next test, the organization that looks at climate change in cricket, right? Mm. That I think Tanya Aldred, if she didn't found, she's very heavily involved in, but I think she founded it. You know, you've got an organization like them who is literally calling cricket boards to account for how much water they are spending, using, and, you know, and the conditions the players are playing in and all that sort of stuff. It takes an awful lot of water to produce wickets. Yeah. And I don't know how much quicker a hybrid wicket is to set up than a normal wicket. But if you can use a hybrid wicket for multiple times afterwards, you're still cashing in. Right.
Yeah.
And so there is definitely a huge advantage from that perspective of preparation, of cost, of the environment, of climate change, of all those things that are really important. And the funny thing specifically about this is I didn't go too much into it in the video, although I did mention it in passing, is climate change and pitches are already incredibly involved with each other. Like South Africa is the best case example of this. Where in South Africa, they will tell you that as it gets hotter in South Africa, their wickets are completely changing, right? And they're becoming a lot more spin friendly over there as they become hotter and drier. So, and I've heard other places around the world say similar things of, oh, we used to do green tops and now we have spinning wickets, or we used to have soft wickets and now we have hard wickets, and these sorts of things. So there is a lot of different changes when you come to that, right, of how these things go. And so if this can help with the environmental issues that cricket has, we're certainly then in a situation of how we go ahead, of we are moving forward as a as a community in cricket, right? And maybe hybrid wickets can help when it comes to just spending less water and less time actually preparing the wickets, and we can keep more wickets fresh and all those sorts of things. That's all a really good thing for cricket going ahead, as we have more problems with our climate, especially it's not going to be an issue in somewhere like England, but it's certainly going to be an issue in places like South Africa and the West Indies and UAE and India and Australia, and where the climate is really changing, you know, quite rapidly in some places.
Yeah, I mean, maybe some people who are watching this podcast or listening in deny climate change and global warming, but let us tell you,
this is not the podcast for that.
Yeah, you can probably shut this podcast at this point, because it is obviously very real, and global warming is causing this planet to become hotter by the day or warmer. And, you know, as Jared said, a lot of water goes into the curation of turf pitches. So if that water can be saved, I mean, you know, hybrid pitches definitely fit the bill in that regard. But also, Jared, when it comes to, you know, pitches or surfaces or playing conditions being impacted by extreme weather, you know, hybrid pitches are better in that regard as well, because they behave okay in extremely damp conditions or extreme heat, because they provide a level of consistency that might not be available when you have actual turf.
Yeah, and I think that's a really important thing. So one of the big problems they have in around the world is when you have a freak weather for a month before you've got a test match or an international game, and maybe it's wetter than it's usual.
Or a New York winter before a T20 World Cup.
Yes, yeah, exactly. Maybe it's a bit too wet. Maybe it's a bit too dry. Maybe it's way hotter than usual. Maybe it's way colder than usual. And the curator is just used to doing the pitches. And suddenly this freak thing happens. They try and get it ready and it doesn't get ready on time. The idea of hybrid wickets would be that you have a level of consistency in the future when even something goes wrong. You're certainly, you know, in a position where this still works going ahead. So there's a lot of advantages there. And we haven't talked about the other one as well, which is what this does for junior cricket, for poorer clubs, for women's cricket, who all struggle to play on turf wickets as they get up. You know, the ability to have more turf wickets available for longer is huge. And most women's cricket is probably played on used wickets, like even at a decent level. And so if we can make the used wickets better, then that doesn't matter. Anyone can play on a used wicket in future if it's a good surface, right? No one's going to have a problem with that, whereas quite often used wickets are not particularly good surfaces. And so, again, we have that going ahead.
Yeah. So you mentioned women's cricket, and we've seen, you know, a lot of women's cricket being played on used surfaces, and the quality of, you know, the cricket is compromised. So that is a big problem that hybrid pitches could really solve. And, you know, of course, they're cheaper. And we'll come to that. I want to tackle the financial element of it later as well. But, you know, we can be, or, you know, live in a world then where the surfaces in women's cricket will not be as slow as we generally are used to. And, yeah, there could be some more parity over there. And you could, you know, kind of ensure consistent competition and quality cricket.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think Kartikeya was one of the people who said a while ago that he thought eventually T20 cricket should go onto AstroTurf, just so that you take the wicket out of it, because it's not really a normal form of cricket and it's just about scoring as quickly as possible. And so I think you certainly have an element of that available to him, you, right? And so that's what hybrids were originally sold to me as, which was we can make T20 wickets pretty much the way that we want to make them consistently, and then they don't degrade by the end of the tournament. So whatever we decide we want our wickets to be from the first game to the last game, they're going to be exactly the same, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's a really solid way of looking at it. And then the other way is perhaps in places where, let's say you're hosting a women's tournament in Bangladesh and you want a little bit more pace in the wickets. You still want them to be Bangladeshi wickets, but you want a little bit more pace in the wickets. It's going to be easier to do on a hybrid surface than it's going to be on a standard surface to be able to tailor it to what you want it to be. So there are little advantages from a cricket perspective all the way littered through this.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That makes perfect sense. And you mentioned how white ball cricket might be the perfect stage for the ICC to kind of experiment even more. And it is where the money's at, right? That's where, you know, cricket's capitalistic cycle kind of, That's what it revolves, or what it revolves around. That's white ball cricket. And maybe in the future we could see, like, you know, franchise tournaments and even limited overs international series where you could use these hybrid surfaces as on a trial and error basis or mechanism. And that could allow you to both reduce the costs and, you know, ensure a bit of consistency throughout that particular tournament.
Yeah. And there are, we're just thinking of a bunch of different ways that this could work. I'm sure there are hundreds of different ways that a system like this could really, really benefit cricket going forward with, you know, consistency, with climate change, with money, you know, all those sorts of things. And with the consistency of cricket, like there is many different pluses that you can find when you think about hybrid wickets.
Yeah. And I mean, the biggest plus has to be the financial element of it. If you are not spending as much money on hybrid pitches, and if they are considerably cheaper, right? Not just like a regular amount, they are quite cheap to prepare and curate and all of that stuff. And, you know, capitalism makes the world go round and cricket is no different. You save every buck you can if the quality of cricket is not compromised, right? I mean, yeah. That part of it is kind of fairly obvious.
Yeah, no, definitely. There's no doubt that there is a world in which these work a lot, but there are other issues here that we need to talk about.
Speaking of the issues then, let us not waste any further time. We mentioned at the start of this podcast that county cricket is, you know, currently trialing these hybrid pitches for 4-day games. And very recently, Gloucester successfully hosted Middlesex in one county game first. And then they hosted the Northants. The game had to be abandoned, you know, during the second innings. And just to kind of spell this out for all of our viewers and listeners, Gloucester were out for 125, which is fairly normal, right? Happens in a first innings, whatever. And Northants were 116 for 2. That is when the game was abandoned. And the reason was that two players were retired hurt back to back. And that deck was dangerous. Massive plot twist.
Yeah, and this is what we were talking about before of testing these things. I don't know if professional athletes who have a career should be the guinea pigs of this kind of thing. Like, I would rather see it used in under 15 level, under 17 level, you know, keep tweaking it until it gets perfect and everything else. And then when we're pretty sure it's safe, you can face an 85 mile an hour bowler on it.
Yeah.
Right? That's not what has happened here. And this wicket was clearly something went wrong with the hybrid version of it. And it became very, very unsafe very quickly. And it's funny when you look at the scorecard, because it looks like Northants were just cruising. But, you know, reading between the lines a little bit, there was a little bit of luck in their innings. And then, of course, yeah, what did you say? They were 116 for 2 or whatever it was. But the last two batters had been retired hurt. Suddenly does change the thing. And a lot of people were being hit on that wicket. Clearly the ball wasn't coming off consistently in the same way that it should have been. And it wasn't seen as a safe wicket to play on.
I mean, this was, of course, an anomaly, because the vast majority of games that we've seen on hybrid pitches in recent years, they've been fine. But given how this has happened early on during county cricket's experiment, this is a situation which is far from ideal. Like, an abandoned game is a terrible look, particularly when it's abandoned because of the surface being dangerous. And county cricket is mainstream, right? And this is exactly the point where you wanted to get things right with respect to hybrid pitches when it comes to 4-day cricket. And bam, this happens. Not good.
I kind of think that it's a bit like the auto-driving cars, right? Where, do you remember early on when we started having auto driving cars, there was a big accident with one of them. And you know, a couple of people died and it was a horrible accident. There was always going to be accidents with auto driving cars though, right? Like, it was, like, I'm not trying to be silly here, but we just all assumed that that would eventually happen, right? Like, but what we have seen from the data is, if we get it right, there will be fewer accidents on the road from auto-driving cars than there are from human-driving cars.
Super wild tangent, but what if you hack into the car and you murder someone, right?
What if you hack into the pitch? No. But the point being is that if that happens early on, that's going to be the news story. Mm. And this is the news story. And there's two issues with this, right? Firstly, there was a hybrid pitch that wasn't good enough and a bunch of people got hurt and they had to shut the game down. The second is, what kind of independent board will come in and have a look and see what went wrong here, right? Is it just the company who put it in who might lose a contract or might just say, we made this small mistake, but we'll fix that next time? Like, this is a big deal. We are sending cricketers out to face fast bowling, and we had an unsafe surface on what was supposed to be a more consistent surface.
Yeah.
Right? That's a big deal to me. And I just don't think, based on the articles I've read, and there aren't that many of them, or, you know, that anyone's taking it anywhere near as seriously as they should be, right? And it's, you know how I feel about this, how I felt about the US wicket, which I'm now assuming and certainly played like it was a bad hybrid wicket. Yeah. There's no reason to send out professionals on a surface that isn't safe, right? There's just no reason to do that. It's a fucking billion-dollar sport. We can get the very basics right. If you want to get that right and you want to do it on underage, under 15 boys and under 15 girls and under 17 boys and under and work it out, get it right over a period of a couple of years until you're 100% sure it's ready, and then do some trials with some fast bowlers, get a Hawkeye machine in to tell us if the ball is bouncing consistently on these wickets, and then use it for professionals. I'm like, fine. Don't just make them play on it because it has some really good advantages for you into the future.
NV Play's tools make cricket data accessible to everyone. They assisted me in making this and support many international cricketers. Access their software on their website for valuable insight.
Yeah, what really blows my mind, Jared, is the lack of or non-existence really of ICC regulations on hybrid pitches, because there are none. And now, granted, the technology of hybrid pitches is fairly new, but you've got to have some research on this technology, and then you've got to thoroughly test it out, as you mentioned. Like, not having those initial preliminary steps before having a strip laid out in a county game, you know, is quite baffling.
Can I ask you something? What is a hybrid wicket? Right? Because you said before, 5% hybrid and 95% natural wicket, right? So I said to the ICC, what is a hybrid wicket? Is it 10% artificial? Is it 20% artificial? Is it 30% artificial? Is it 95% artificial, but it's 5% turf? That's a hybrid wicket? Do you know what I mean? I don't think there's a regulation on this at the moment, unless I've missed it and they've brought it in recently, and it's very possible. But when I asked, they didn't have an answer.
And what about quality control testing? Like, I've worked in software. I've, you know, studied management engineering, which is kind of like industrial engineering. So I know exactly, you know, what happens when things are made in a factory. There is quality control. If you are, you know, stitching these surfaces together and putting in 5% artificial, not grass or non-grass, you've got to test that out, right? There's got to be some sort of quality control.
Independent, right?
Yeah.
Are we just trusting that the companies are doing this right when it's, I mean, do we trust companies in other places? Like, I just think it's just one of those things of where it's like, I can see a lot of people going, oh, look, I'm sure they're fine and this was just a bad wicket. And that could be right. But it doesn't really matter if that's the case or not, if no one is overseeing what they are doing, right? And if we don't have any regulations at all, what's to stop some cricket board just going, okay, we're going to make it 99%. And then it's like, oh, now we're going to bring in it. Right? It just can get silly really fast for no reason. Just come. Get all the manufacturers who make these wickets into a room, get a bunch of scientists in there, get a bunch of curators in there, come up with some really good regulations and some really good independent tests. As I said, as simple as, you want to prove to us that your wickets are safe? Okay, we're going to play all these games on them, and then we're going to bring eight. And then after playing 3 days of an under 17s game on these tournaments, we're going to bring in a 90 mile an hour bowler to bowl, or a bowling machine even at 90 miles an hour, and we're going to check the consistency of the bounce after 3 days.
Yeah.
Right.
That would be the obvious thing to do, like, for any organization creating any sort of product, really. You know, it's not even about pitches or surfaces or turf versus artificial. It's literally about, you're making something, you have to ensure that it plays out as expected. Like, when you create those, you know, phone cases, you try to break them, right? To check whether or not the phone will be safe inside the case.
That's I just think Otterbox are doing a much better job than hybrid pitches.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if Elon comes up with a chip that is to be inserted in human beings tomorrow, a person might die at the start, but he's probably going to be testing that out thoroughly as well. Or maybe not. I don't know about Elon.
I was going to adjust. It could have said anyone else.
Yeah, bad analogy. Like, that's,
but the analogy. Point is, if in order for him to put a chip in someone's head, right, which is an unsafe thing that we all understand could go horribly wrong, there is a bunch of loopholes that he has to go through because there is a safety element there, right? Cars are regulated, right? Like all these different things that you know, food is tested, right? Medicine is tested. But suddenly facing 85-mile-an-hour balls on a cricket wicket, it's just like, I'm sure it'll be fine. Right? And to me, it doesn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah, and from what I've understood, the main caveat over here, and that's entirely based on the conversations that you've had with other cricketers who have played on these hybrid pitches, is that the ball basically behaves differently when it bounces off the naturally grown bit and then the artificial bit. And that, to me, Jared, sounds pretty goddamn dangerous.
Yeah. And I don't know what if there's a way of fixing that, whether you can have the artificial bit just under the surface eventually or what it may be. But what I've been told by almost everyone who's ever played on these wickets is they are all two-paced, right? Which means that they are all inherently flawed.
Right.
Which means they are not good wickets. And, you know, if you're facing Pat Cummins and he comes in and he bowls back of a length and one ball skids on really quickly and the next ball lands an inch to the side of that and stops and props at you, it's hard to bat, but it's also a little bit dangerous at that point. Now, we don't know if that's what happened in this other game. I'd have to check if I know anyone in the games to have a chat to about it. But what I do know is that that's been a pretty consistent feedback all the way through, that the players don't really like them. Now, it is important to note that players don't like anything new and will always find a way to moan about things when they change, which is fair, right? So maybe that's not as a massive issue, all things considered. But the fact that we are making what is supposed to be a more consistent surface, right, that we can tailor-made to any kind of conditions we want and keep them for really long. Yeah. It doesn't really matter if one ball pings really quickly off the rope or the wire, whatever it is, and the next one hits the surface and stops. That means it is always going to be a bad wicket, right? Yeah. And until they can fix that, again, it's maybe a training aid. I'm not sure it's a great training aid either, right? Like, to me, it feels like, especially at the top level of cricket, there's an element of maybe this should be used in club cricket more, right? I mean, most club wickets are crap anyway, right? Yeah. Like, I don't, and also they're not as dangerous because you're not facing people who are bowling at 80, 85, 90, 95 miles an hour.
Plus, when you're marketing something as being more consistent than actual turf, being inconsistent with the bounce is something you cannot afford, really. Like, it contradicts itself, right? And also, there's another element to this that we have to factor in, and that is that no other sport, you know, in the world perhaps relies more on agriculture and weather and climate than cricket, because no one knows to the T how a surface will behave in a test match and evolve during the course of that test match as well. Everyone will have their own guesses. You'll have these pitch reports and everything, and often we'll see the surface doing something completely different than what was told in the pitch report, right? It makes cricket unique. There is an element of unknown over there, and, you know, that uniqueness is under threat. And for me, it kind of gives cricket its flavor. If you take that out, you'll be, like, diminishing a bit of cricket's soul. And, yeah, I mean, what's your take on all of that?
Yeah, I mean, I think anyone who's followed my stuff will know that I think that's one of the things that makes cricket kind of unsolvable. And it means that it's probably why cricket is such an obsessive sport.
It adds character to the sport, really.
Yeah, because you can't just work it out at any one stage, because you've worked out absolutely everything. This is the length. We have to bowl to Faf du Plessis. This is the line. This is the delivery. And we go out there and on this pitch, it doesn't work.
Yeah.
And you have to start again, right? Whereas if you're on a basketball court or a rugby field or whatever, and it's like, we've worked out a weakness in this other team's defense, well, it's fine. You know, maybe it will rain and it's a bit slipperier and we can't quite play that. But more or less, we've worked it out what we can do here. And cricket's just like, no. With a hard ball, maybe. With a soft ball, no. With a replacement ball, definitely. Like, you know, like all these different things give cricket a unique and wild characteristic that can't be tamed.
Yeah.
And it's why this is not slagging off ODI cricket or T20 cricket here, but it's why Test cricket is more interesting than those other ones. I mean, not, you could argue the others are more entertaining, but not more interesting, right? It's because you know, you have Bangladesh facing the new ball and it's zipping around everywhere and they're six for not many. Hmm. And then maybe the clouds part and the wicket changes a little bit, or, you know, clouds come in and the wicket changes a little bit. The ball degrading, the pitch degrading, mm-hmm. and the combination of those two things and how they go with each other. The fact that certain conditions seem to help certain kinds of bowlers and all those sorts of things.
Morning rain prior to the start of play. Stuff like that, you know?
Exactly. All that sort of stuff is part of the genius of certainly the design of Test cricket.
Yeah.
If we take that away, we're making it a little bit more like baseball again, right? And I'm in a unique position that I've played a lot of cricket on synthetic wickets and a little bit on matting as well. And you can't, there is a slight difference in synthetic wickets. Like older synthetic wickets usually skid through a little bit more, and newer synthetic wickets sort of a little bit more tennis ball bouncy and everything else. And there's slight differences in the different kinds of AstroTurf wickets that you get. But basically you turn up and you know you're going to have to bowl swing, because the ball doesn't seem as much on those wickets. And if you're on matting, you know, you're probably going to use your spinners a lot more and everything else. You know exactly what the game is going to be, right? And your plans are pretty set in concrete. And it was funny. I did a podcast Roberta Moretti Avery, the Brazilian captain, the other day. And she was saying that she was finding it really hard to explain to her players when they went to play on turf that the best bowler that they have was no longer the best bowler, because this wicket didn't allow for that bowler to be any good.
Hmm.
This wicket needed low and skiddy bowlers, and their big, tall, fast bowler was getting hit everywhere, right? And on synthetic, they'd all grown up on synthetic wickets. And on synthetic wickets, the best bowler is the best bowler, right? Hmm. And it doesn't change. We would lose some of that, right?
Yeah.
And the uniqueness. And I think that it's funny, the way that they try and market cricket and everything, you know, you look at Lalit Modi and the IPL of trying to Americanize, that'll do.
Yeah.
Americanize it. We've seen that with the 100 and the Big Bash at times and, you know, different things. Actually, what generally works for cricket is the things that make it unique and the things that make it different. Because it can't be compared to baseball, right? It is a very different sport to baseball in many different ways.
You actually have to pitch the ball onto the surface in this sport, right?
Yeah, right. And so it is a very different sport. And I think in the future, despite the fact that everyone who's run cricket for the last 40 years thinks that cricket's quirkiness is its issues, I actually think that's its features going ahead. Yeah. Try conquering this, right? Try conquering this sport when the pitch doesn't give a shit what you think. And I think that there's an argument to be made that if we make 4-day and 5-day cricket on hybrids, we're giving some of that away, and it might not be in cricket's benefit in the long term.
Yeah.
In limited overs cricket, I'm not as anti them, but they have to be better. And I don't just mean this cluster wicket that was obviously a shithole. I just mean in general, if it's not consistent off the surface, then we shouldn't be using them, right? Yeah. Like if they're not working the way that we want a good cricket pitch to work, why are we using inferior cricket wickets? It doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if you look at all the pros and cons, of course, hybrid pitches on a good day, you know, will be consistent. They'll be consistent in all different kinds of weather as well. They will cost less always. You will be using less water always. They're fixing a plethora of issues, the women's cricket stuff. And, you know, you could have more limited overs games on them. All of that stuff has been discussed. But when they go wrong, Jared, bones are broken. Right? We can't deny that either. And plus, this last bit I feel is really important and close to my heart as well, because, you know, it does take away from the character of the sport. Like, you're losing out on something that is very unique to cricket and adds so much flavor to it. Like, that's why we love the sport. And that is directly, like, what I'm talking about is directly linked with how a turf pitch changes over time throughout the course of a test match. So, keeping all of these things in mind, are you then more for or against hybrid pitches or the concept in general?
This is brought to you by HitWicket, the cricket game that has playing and strategy all in your pocket.
It's funny what you were just talking about then. I think if you go back and you look at the conversations about when they first put in liquid fertilizer on wickets, that there was a lot of problem. I was just like, oh, you're ruining the game of cricket. You're making it too much for batters. And then when countries started covering their wickets, in people in England said, this isn't proper cricket. Proper cricket is playing on uncovered wickets. So you don't want to get in that situation of this is wrong. And so therefore, it's not what I grew up with. So therefore it's wrong, I should say. Right. You know, that sort of everything that grew, everything that happened between the age of 15 and 28 is exactly how it should be. And then after that, that age, nothing's perfect anymore. So I don't want to be on that side of things. But regardless of that, if there's no oversight, then I just assume cricket's going to get this wrong.
Yeah.
Right. And secondly, they have to prove that these wickets are as consistent when it comes to bounce and everything else as a proper wicket in a scientific conditions consistently for me to be in a situation where I'm like, this is the future.
And if it's right? not deteriorating, then test it. Yeah. Right?
So all those things have to be, if it helps cricket clubs around the world, and it's just, as we said before, really helps women's cricket and maybe even disability cricket as well, and associate nations around the world that don't have as much money, I'm all for that.
Correct.
But I'm not in a situation where I think they're ready to be used at the top level men's professional level over 3 and 4 and 5 days.
Yeah.
So I'm anti that push. But I can see how hybrid wickets can really help help the game grow around the world and can help different parts of it. So I don't want to be against hybrid wickets, right? I just want to be in a situation where things are done correctly. You know, I feel like I'm a very immature person. And I'm a very silly person. And yet cricket somehow still makes me feel like I'm sometimes the adult in the room. And I'm not. I'm a haphazard nuts person. So all I'm saying is let's just tell everyone what the world is, what a hybrid wicket is. Let's have some tests in place. And you have to be able to prove as a company that you can actually put these wickets together safely, and that we know what's happening. And when something goes wrong, I don't want it to be like air crash investigations or anything.
Yeah.
There has to be an element of that, of like, let's work out why this wicket fell apart. Right?
And I feel like the ICC needs to put in regulations that these companies need to follow, and that's the only way to go around this. You know, personally, I'm against introducing hybrid pitches to longer format cricket because I enjoy the deterioration of a surface. I feel like that is what, you know, exemplifies or kind of epitomizes the soul of red ball cricket. And I don't want to compromise on the soul. But of course, like, since it is such a cost-effective measure, hybrid pitches, we do suspect that we'll see more and more of them in the future, regardless of the odd abandoned game, right? It is, of course, still early days in this experiment as well.
And we don't expect the companies to be, like, legends at this, because 10, 15 years ago, this didn't exist.
Yeah. So I suppose the best place to end this podcast would be with the million-dollar question. Jared, do you think the future is hybrid?
I think the way that cricket works is if it's cheaper, we will probably see it come in. I don't think we'll ever see fully synthetic cricket take over. I do think we might see some synthetic leagues, like, you know, top franchise leagues. You might get some synthetic leagues at times.
I don't mind that, by the way. Limited overs cricket is a go ahead from me. I'm fine.
And that might, and I'm not talking about it anytime soon, but hybrids might make that path easier for those sorts of leagues in the future, because again, it is cheaper, right? Look at what happened with the Canadian game that was cancelled recently, and all, you know, all the money that they lost in that tournament. It's just cheaper to do it this way. So yeah, so I do think that we will see more and more international games being played on hybrid surfaces. I still think there will be certain grounds that will probably hold on to their turf wickets. But it's, if you think about it from a sport perspective, maybe tennis is the best example of everyone used to play on grass, right? Yeah. Like the Australian Open was on grass, the US Open was on grass, and the Australian Open and the US Open are no longer on grass, right? And when it comes down to it, there are so few grass tennis courts left in the world because they are really expensive. They are, right? They are really. I've got a bunch of grass courts in my road.
I've toured Wimbledon, and I have been told by the guide about all the science that goes into grass cutting and when the blade is this big and when it's that healthy, that is exactly when you cut it. And then it has to be a certain amount of weeks prior to Wimbledon. There is a lot of science that goes behind that. And as you said, a lot of money is spent on getting it right. So I understand the, you know, feasibility element of hybrid pitches, because it could make life easier for, you know, a lot of leagues and a lot of associate nations. And also it makes the game accessible to a lot more people. Let's not ignore that.
Exactly. And there was a lot of complaints when the Australian Open and the US Open went away from grass courts, right? Mm. No one really looks at the Australian Open and the US Open now as less than. They're just different tournaments. So I think that's probably where the future is. And you will get Wimbledon / Lords kind of places who might keep those other wickets in. But I think there'll be a lot of countries and a lot of cricket boards around the world who'll be like, actually, we can control some things here and we're going to control them. And hopefully, maybe that's the move. Like if so many people start doing it, maybe that's the big move in this technology and we can get those wickets better.
Perhaps.
The way it was spoken to me by when I chatted to the ICC was, there's already so many shit wickets in the world, right? You make things better, right? And I think that was a bit of a silly way of putting it, but also it's correct, right? There are so many pitches that aren't that good in the world. And so if we can find a system that eventually gets us to a point where we can have more consistent good wickets, where maybe we still have what you want, which is wickets falling apart towards the end of the game. And maybe in limited cricket, we just have almost a standard wicket. In India, this is what the wicket does right across the IPL, and almost every IPL game is played on the exact same kind of wicket.
Perhaps. Yeah.
Might be the sort of thing that we are moving towards, right? Hmm. That's not a dystopian future.
If anything, that's a utopian future, which I can bet my bottom dollar on that cricket won't get right the way you want it to. Yeah.
Probably won't, yeah.
But they won't nail it.
They won't nail it. But the point is that there is a long way to go. And I'm hopeful. And as you said before, if it does help emerging nations and women's cricket and disability cricket and other places, and I'm all for that, right? I'm absolutely all for that. And so I hope that hybrid crickets will have a positive impact on our sport and not a negative one. But we've got to be mindful all the way through that we're doing the right things. And at the moment, we're not being mindful.
Yeah. I mean, I think you've summed it up pretty nicely. And that's pretty much almost exactly where I stand on this issue as well. But we'd love to hear from you, viewers and listeners, what you feel about hybrid surfaces and whether or not you think they should be incorporated, in international cricket and test cricket, more importantly. Let us know all of your thoughts in the comments section below, because we'd love to hear from you. And also, just a quick reminder to everybody, you can go to goodareas.co and bookmark that webpage. It can prove to be your one-stop shop for all the work that we do as part of this team, whether it be written content, videos, or podcasts. We'll be back with another episode of Footmark soon enough. That is all for now. You guys have a good one, and goodbye.
Thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bairam Kazi and Estelle Vassadevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recordings. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work. If you make a lot of content like me, you will need help. And that is why we use Minvo.pro, a slicing and dicing tool that uses AI to conjure up great clips from your podcast chats and meetings. If you make content, go to Minvo.pro to cut it.